Today, the property bubble with a lot. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined by Tony Lacantro from Alto Capital. Hi, Tony.
Always a pleasure to be back, Martin. I just thought with the way the world is going, asset prices and what we're seeing, it was time to get back on the show and hopefully provide my observations and how I'm handling where the world is heading. But love your content, love your channel, and thanks for the opportunity.
Well, it's great to have you back on. Our timing couldn't be more perfect given the fact that the US markets were down a couple of percent, Bitcoin's dropping, gold's dropping, you know, everybody's now worrying about inflation. And, you know, we always said, I think, that there would be a turning point in the market. Now, whether this is or not, but people need to be thinking about what if in fact, you know, the markets are going to get into more difficult territory and the yeah, frankly, stupid growth we've had in recent times is not going to continue. And that's really what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, I think what's happened is the last time the world went crazy over speculation was 2017. And we all know what happened after that. So what I've done for viewers is I've put together a slideshow. My slideshows are pretty much as predictable as an AC/DC chord progression or the next line of a Wiggles song. But anyway, look, I've got to reiterate that this is only my opinion. This is through my observations. I do have 23 years experience dealing with speculators, fear, greed, and stupidity. And I think I come from a position where I can speak with some authority as I have one of the greatest collections of people and how they think in certain situations. So anyway, let's get right into it. So we're calling this the property bubble with the lot. If anyone wants to contact me, throw barbs at me, my email address is there. I should reiterate that I'm absolutely drowning in new business and I'm actually having to turn people away. It's pretty much in order to keep the high level of service I pride myself on. That's my crypto portfolio in the background. That's my Dogecoin. Anyway. Look, there's a disclaimer that pretty much is saying that this is general advice only. I am doing my best to tell the truth. If you're after some help, approach a financial advisor. And sadly, Martin, what's happening is everyone's leaving the industry in droves due to these new educational requirements. So the time people need financial advice is when we have less advisors. And do-it-yourself schemes and financial program systems and wealth creation is getting certainly more difficult. So anyway, that's the disclaimer. Now, I think this next slide sums up where we're at in the world. Now, every asset class looked like a Robert Palmer video, I believe. Now, I know I use these slides too often, but with asset classes, you have to remember who is not going to age like a loaf of bread. Who's not going to take 80% of your money? And who can you rely on long term? And the slide to the right, obviously, is the GameStop guy with the aptly named T-shirt Game Over. And that's been a product of shareholder activism, which is one of the most ridiculous things I've seen. And future generations, people studying the economy and alien life form are going to laugh at us for hundreds of years to come. But anyway, bless Robert Palmer. I love those videos. Anyway, I've always got to have one in my slideshows. Now, here is a quote. I actually was speaking to someone today who is quite a good real estate agent in Melbourne. He's also an auctioneer, and I've known him for some time, and he actually tells the truth. So what he was saying is on the 17th of April, he had four auctions and each of them attracted drug money prices. And now what he's saying is 5 weeks later, everyone wants to put their property on the market. And now he's revised his strategy where he's trying to sell them pre-auction, not to get exposed on auction day. And I think that's quite a seismic shift in the way markets are heading. And I think that can be reiterated in Sydney, where we've seen pictures of auctions with a lot of people, a lot of excitement. But to a certain extent, a lot of it is just neighbours sticky beaking. People often get that adrenaline rush when there's a camera around or they're in competition. Or as we see on auction shows, when they lift the bids $1,000 and are a fraud and end up not paying for it, aka the block. Now, I actually hunted down this table, which I think is really relevant just to show how out of sync property prices have become relative to rents and wages. Now, you look at that ratio for Sydney at 14.7 times down to Perth at 5.9. I just think that that is a ludicrous situation. And for Perth, WA, to have the strongest economy in the country, one of the strongest economies on the planet, with iron ore pretty much doing all the heavy lifting for Australia, our price to income ratio is still 5.9 times, which is still slightly on the expensive side. And I can, look, I can always happy to apply a premium for Sydney. Let's say Sydney falls to 7 to 8 times earnings. We're in for a hefty decline. And you look at the risk reward of the yield, the gross yields on rentals, why would you even do it? You're better off having your money. You're better off booking concert tickets 5 years out as a method of forced saving rather than going through gross rental yields with all the costs and heartache of finding tenants. So I just think the risk reward in property does not stack up. Perth is more reasonably priced. I mean, I live 5 kilometres from the city. A lot of the houses in my area are getting snapped up very quickly. A lot of the suburbs, I mentioned the suburbs like Camillo and Kelmscott last year on your show, they've been the biggest growers in the Perth market because you could pick up a house with a decent land size for about $180,000, 30 minutes from the city. So I think what you're going to see is declines, but some stabilisation in the likes of Perth, Brisbane and Adelaide. But to me, that table just shows how out of sync property prices have become and where we could see some nasty corrections. And I think that table even surprised me. But, you know, music always gets back to guitars, bass and drums, and property and any other market will revert back to fundamentals. And to me, that's a very ugly looking chart. I stole this from you, Martin, the Bank of Mum and Dad, the 9th largest financial institution loaning money to kids with parents that have worked hard all their lives, putting up an average of $90,000 in equity or cash towards getting their kids into a home at the top of the market. Now, to me, that looks like leveraging Dogecoin, Arscoin, Titscoin, and Poocoin, throwing cum rocket. And then I was actually out having a few drinks with some friends, and we said, what about Ponzi coin? I put it into my phone and it's trading. So one of those coins. I just think that once the kids struggle to pay their mortgage and the parents then try to bail them out, it's a house of cards. So those figures are represented in those charts, which I have stolen from Tarek and yourself. And to me, that's a very ugly situation, especially at the top of the market. Now, their charts you'd expect to see more towards the bottom of the market. There's my three kids. They're not going to be getting any handouts from me. I think it's all about loving them and giving them an education, but they're certainly not going to be three customers of mine. I don't think I'm that stupid, to be honest. The next slide is a bit busy, but that just shows to educate kids, they need to have a look at margin call, which is be first, be smarter or cheat. As we keep saying, Martin, if you're going to panic first. The Big Short, I had to laugh. There was a question on The Chase as to where Margaret Robbie made a comparison of financial markets. And of course, that was in the bubble bath. So another great movie to educate your kids, along with 99 Homes, which just showed the angst and the true feelings of what suburbs had when they had to hand their keys for money. Now, my reckoning, or where I intend to educate my kids, is to do the Andy Dufresne and crawl through a heap of shit to get to where they want to go financially. And of course, in that movie, that was all chocolate syrup. So a bit like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And I think the end game for kids is to have that final beach scene, which I think makes most people cry, including myself, and not to end up in the cray pot. And of course, a cray pot is bloody easy to get into, but try getting out of it. So I just think now's the time to ground my kids and to discuss what's happening in the world with anyone who's prepared to listen. But I can assure you that not many are doing that. So what I've said is I believe the market topped on the 17th of April, or close enough. It certainly felt like the speculative blow-off in dot-com. I was quite active during the dot-com bubble. I was doing 100,000 commission a month. I had 500 clients. And then suddenly one day, I felt the electricity. My hair stood up on my arm. Another broker pulled someone by the neck and shoved them up against the wall. And when a punch is thrown in the dealing room, that's often close to the top. So it certainly felt like the end of dot-com. And the Nikkei in 1989, where the price earnings ratio was 52 times for boring companies, and stocks like Japan Airlines, due to their pride, were trading at 900 times earnings, which is ridiculous. So I think buyer exhaustion is going to creep in. You just can't run. You just can't have Usain Bolt run a marathon at that breakneck speed. There's always a chance we might see another TV show come on, like Buying Blind or another auction show. There's plenty of room for that. And my belief is firmly that the greater ship of fools has sailed. And I can always go back to those comments from a prominent real estate agent who I trust, is that the buyers are certainly drying up, and that's cause for huge concern. So I call the market Pantene. Of course, it won't happen overnight. I just say we're going to start out with some moderate price reductions. Experts are going to start saying, look, buy the first dip, 5% off, it's a bargain. These falls are going to intensify, new initiatives and grants. Now, I saw the 2% deposit for single parents where the government's going to guarantee the other 18%. Oh, that was absolutely horrifying, because I know the best investment a single parent can make is in themselves and their kids, to get themselves mentally, physically, financially and emotionally healed to repartner. Because I think that a lot of these single parents are going to be thrown into the Tammy situation of trying to get in contact with my budget, trying to ward off creditors. They've probably got a load of store cards. Some unscrupulous mortgage brokers are probably cooking the books to get the fees. But, surely a single parent has got better things to do in life than head towards bankruptcy. And as I mentioned earlier, the only thing that could save many of them is to find someone else, and hopefully that they'll support them. So I think then we're going to have inflation, which is already upon us. You've only got to look at the costs you're paying for fuel, rent, consumer goods, and you look at the prices of commodities, they're at near all-time highs. So inflation and a stronger economy are the biggest threat. And we're also going to have an increase in interest rates, because we can't have rampant inflation here. And viewers should be mindful that the long-term RBA cash rate is between 6 and 6.5%. The long-term average mortgage payment rate was 9.41%. Now, I was having a chat with a new client who has a extensive real estate portfolio at East Dubbo, and he said, well, my yields are going to support the prices. And I said, well, what happens when your repayments go to 6%? And he dropped the F-bomb. And I think there's a lot of homeowners, investors that are in that situation. And I had a laugh when Birch said that he's going to become a billionaire due to inflation, but how the hell is he going to service his loans? So prices were going to grind lower, retail sales off a cliff. We're already seeing JB Hi-Fi, Kogan, and other retailers, Mosaic Brands, which is Noni B, and other labels really struggle. And employment, I think employment's going to be the real issue, underemployment. And the sad thing is a lot of the pizza delivery jobs, Uber and Menulog jobs are taken by people that essentially want to work for no money. So I just think that second job market is certainly going to dry up. The other option people have is to try and get on Big Brother and develop an Instagram following. Good luck with that. You then go to an OnlyFans page and people pay $10 a month to see an unremarkable person. So I just think people are going to get more desperate. We're going to see scams. If you don't hold a garage sale shortly, I think you're mad, because you've got to panic first. You've got to sell your rubbish first. And I was driving around a suburb in Perth called Victoria Park, and the whole suburb, the curbside's coming up, the whole suburb was littered with garbage. And I think that's going to be an emerging trend where all our rubbish needs to be thrown out. I think people need to declutter their lifestyles. As well, we're going to see the used car market fall off a cliff, and the best time to sell was a couple of weeks ago when they were talking about shortages, but some Land Cruisers going for huge profits. I think once the supply chain comes in for used cars, I think the market is certainly going to decline. Like I expected with the soccer mum Q5s, Q7s and M4s, M5s, which I'd expect to flood the market also. There's one thing, Martin, which we haven't really seen, is emerging social unrest, crime levels increase, people in those outer suburbs are going to be calling for debt relief to hold off, more government bailouts, and the end result is where speculators and everyone gets themselves in some trouble and all they want is a royal commission. So pretty ugly scenario. And I've come up with where we're going to end up. I think Sydney-Melbourne median prices down 30% plus still has them in the overvalued territory. When you have higher interest rates coming, you have inflation coming, and you have pretty much a small number of buyers at higher prices. Some outer suburbs where Uber drivers have used credit cards to buy land. A lot of these new developments with no infrastructure that are highly congested, I think, are going to fall 70% plus. Ghettos will emerge. You'll see beautifully manicured lawns, gardens, front of the house. And I think this is going to decline, a la similar to Florida in The Big Short. Perth market's been very strong. I still expect people to want to move to within 10 kilometres of the city. I think prices are still going to head northeasterly in a gentle direction. But I think Perth, Brisbane and Adelaide are going to perhaps have some declines. Some pockets will do well. But these markets, whilst they're still expensive on a historical basis, haven't had the runaway prices in Sydney and Melbourne and some remote country areas. I know Orange and other areas that are, you know, land's going for $9,000 an acre. Stagflation is rife. This is the economic equivalent of being sandpapered to death. And equities markets, it's actually better to have a short, sharp correction than 10 years of stagflation. For those that are unaware, stagflation is an inflationary recession where you have economic growth going backwards but prices rising. So I think, you know, Australia's been on a tear. Certainly we have been the lucky country. We've dodged major collapses due to China, government bailouts. However, you know, we haven't been really driving a car using the reverse gear for about 30 years now. And I still remember the coming out of the early 90s recession. I was a poorly paid police officer in Bondi. I was actually able to buy a unit 400 to 500 meters from work, and that area was generally cheap. And in the early 90s, teachers, firemen, nurses were able to buy a house where they wanted and able to work close by. And I remember areas such as North Curlcurl, Curlcurl, Freshwater, where I used to surf on a regular basis, were actually rough suburbs. Now, you know, you simply add polished floorboards and a Hamptons tone and name your price. But I think, you know, and the scary part is a lot of these outer Sydney suburbs are suddenly blue chip. But in all honesty, it's just a product of cheap money, Ponzi growth of assets through cooking the books for revaluations. And sadly, I just think we're heading towards probably one of the darkest periods of our financial history after one of the greatest parties. So certainly some worrying times ahead. And when do I think these assets are going to be worth getting back into? It's similar to when the death of equities was called in on the 13th of August, 1979. And a lot of these financial mainstream press organisations will give the signal when it's time to go in and start buying. Obviously, property markets are markets within a market. Some areas will do well, some will able to develop, but I think the headline figures are going to be extremely poor. But we could still be 5 to 7 years away, the optimum time to go in and start buying for longer term growth. And if you have a look at it, one of my favourite charts shows that real price growth in Australian property, it took about 70 years to break even from the 1980s, 1890s land bubble. So in real price terms, the growth can be anemic. So what I'm seeing now is a world that's purely gone absolutely batshit crazy. We have Doge to the moon, where shareholder activism, they're trying to get this worthless coin to a dollar from nothing. You know, people say if you invested 10,000 in Dogecoin, you'd be now worth over $1 million. Yeah, well, that's true if you went to prison with no computer to trade, or unfortunately you're in a coma during that time, because a lot of people would have sold at the first sign of a 50-100% return, all being stopped out because they're a disciplined chartist. Cum Rocket just absolutely defies me. Anyway, this is worldwide stupidity. And Titscoin, again, we had a porn star, Lana Rhodes, who was promoting Titscoin. And one of my sons, who shall remain nameless, came up to me and said, "Dad, do you know who Lana Rhodes is?" And I said, "Of course I do, son. He was a famous Aboriginal boxer that will go down in Australian folklore." So that might take some people some time to think about it. But anyway, no, that's an actual true story. I know I can always tell people I caught a larger fish, but no, we're going to have a laugh about that, especially at his 21st. So I just think that that's a ridiculous situation. Now you can put the name of a coin in or what you're after and it'll generate another Ponzi scheme. And it's always the early adapters that will make a shitload of money, and the retail investor, the mum and dads, gets left behind. So I just think Elon Musk was on Saturday Night Live. Some critics will say his performance sucked, but he actually came out and said Dogecoin is a hustle and the price collapsed. So he had a lot of new speculators that were expecting him to be bullish, and they're going to be able to sell after the show. And I think what that has done is given people a lesson in market dynamics, that the best time to sell would have been before he went on that show at quite a handy profit. So I just think we're celebrities. We had McAfee when he was saying Bitcoin was going to $1 million, otherwise he'd eat his genitals in a public show. It goes back to the old mining float days where David Boone was promoting a gold company called Tasgold, which couldn't raise the money. And I've also seen cases where Steve Smith is promoting the trading of CFDs, which I call contracts for dickheads. So I just think the world has lost the plot with these scams and speculation. So when a speculative bubble bursts, and I've seen some in my time, 80% losses for the real rubbish, a lot of these worthless assets will go back to where they came from, essentially zero. People should be reminded that Bitcoin lost 80% in the fall from the 20,000 to about the 3 from the 2017 highs. So it all fads always end badly. New investors looking to get rich quick get wiped out. These are young 30-somethings trading on their mobile phones, trading crypto. You might as well seriously have a sports bet app open and have a decent tip, because you can make 10, 20 times your money off a horse race. And I think what's happening is, I was reading in an article by Triple J of all places where someone put $100 into crypto and it was now worth $800. Fair enough, that's $700 in profit, but a lifetime of bad financial habits, where we have the Buckley's tree of that person becoming a good investor to invest in companies that develop jobs, taxation, medical breakthroughs, and or resource discoveries. So, you know, these kids, unfortunately, not that many were going to graduate to being value investors, but you're going to see a whole new class pretty much wiped out, and they'll then blame the celebrities. Everyone will be throwing stuff at Elon Musk. I just think the SEC, relative to where he is in Tesla, should actually look at those activities. And what actually saves, I know there's a lot of rubbish on the ASX, but what saves it is the fact that you've got to issue a prospectus, and you do have listing managers which will go through those prospectuses for you. And we also have the draw code. So it's very hard to bullshit to get a listed company, but any scam on crypto can go straight through to the keeper. Oh, I just think that situation's ridiculous. And what we find when a speculative bubble ends, everyone's a fair weather friend. They're great until the situation becomes unprofitable, or you have to give them somewhere to stay, or lend you their car. So pretty much that's a combination of property and crypto markets. I'm now going to look at the stock market. I had a bit of a think about this. I'm just going to keep the trend going rather than tell people what I'm buying, because I just think that'll be like an AC/D song at your daughter's ballet concert. It just wouldn't go. So there's a chart of the Dow Jones. Finally, we had a decent fall, 681 points. A lot of speculators, investors, their threshold is 500 points. They'll throw out all the top quality companies. For me, that index has been tiptoeing through the tulips for too long. We had 34, 35 point increases, 100, 200 point increases, not much to fall. But if you look at that chart, you can see what happened during COVID. And now it's still not far off record highs. So we have a long way to fall. And again, we could have a short, sharp correction, or an even worse case would be 10 years of absolute pain for those in the top 30 companies in the US. NASDAQ, massive run, has just come off some nosebleed highs. However, the Australian tech sector has been smashed into the next postcode. We have the buy now, pay later sector coming off. Afterpay is suddenly on the nose. And we also have some of these previous high flyers like Appen and Altium also come in for a beating. And I also mentioned Kogan earlier, that tech stocks are a lot of fun and they're expensive till they're not. And I still think they've got a long way to become cheap. So I think markets are certainly fragile and prone to greater falls. And you've got to look at Twitter. The mood, everyone's happy, everyone's putting up bullish case scenarios, and the tone has simply changed overnight. Now we've got inflation fears. We are going to see several thousand points grind off the Dow, maybe some more. But now, you know, once the bears take hold, a lot of people are going to be scared of the market. And again, that's just going to revert back to fundamentals, which it has always done before the world got absolutely punched drunk on speculation. So here's a chart of the BBUS. I've actually put a lot of money in this. I've had to dollar cost average it. I'm now pretty close to the mark. But anyway, so those that bought near the top expecting the US market to fall have had a torrid time. The Dow Jones, it's relative to the S&P 500, which of course includes the Dow Jones. But to me, that's a very ugly chart. So moving right along, what am I doing during these times? Well, I've had multiple gains. Now is my chance to protect them for my family's future. Oh, shit, that sounds like an Apia insurance ad. But anyway, look, I've had the odd 5, 10, 20 bagger and a 100 bagger. To me, you know, I've come from a position where on my second divorce, I had no money and had to borrow to survive. I thought, well, you know, I've had some success. Some of the stocks I've mentioned on this channel have done well. Not all of them will, but I need to protect that to be around for the next speculative bubble, which will come. So now I've put 20% of my portfolio in the BBUS. I'm aware it will decay. I'm aware that the market may melt up. I love the risk reward of this. I will monitor it. Whenever I need some cash to buy one of my beaten up companies, I'm going to do it. I have to really babysit this investment. But if we do get, you know, we start to see some 1,000, 2,000 point down nights on the Dow, which will be reflected in the S&P 500, I think that that's a situation where I can raise cash quickly without having to sell falling stocks into an illiquid market. And I'm sticking to having some precious metals. I do have a little bit of that. I think that the gold and silver are a way to protect your purchasing power. Of course, some people will buy those precious metals at the right price and make some speculative upside. My focus remains on biotech because the long-term effects of COVID will not be known. I still think that we're in the early stages of a biotech bubble where companies that can come up with lung, liver, any organ issues, cancer down the track is going to do well. And we're also going to see hopefully some developments in vaccines, which will then be able to fight future pandemics as well. And we also need companies that can deliver drugs. So I think biotech is going to be where it's at. I've positioned myself in that area. I've floated a couple of biotech companies and I'll look to float some more. Exploration companies, well, that's where the real cheesecake is, because if your company drills into the mother load, the stock price becomes overvalued. I have had some discoveries. One of the more recent ones, which I didn't capture, but I know a lot of people that did, was Chalice, which made a discovery 70 kilometres from Perth. The shares were trading like Days of Our Lives or Home and Away. You could go back 6 months later and they're still trading at 10, 11, 12 cents. They recently came off $7.50. I also like small industrial companies that will head towards being cash flow positive, where the small cap funds will jump all over them. So I'm sticking to my knitting. I've been doing it 23 years. Good companies with solid fundamentals and good management have never let me down. So in summary, COVID-19, yep, I admit it. It's made me look pretty stupid for a year. But if you go back, I was on track to win that bet with the kook and people were calculating it. But, you know, who would have thought a global pandemic would have allowed people a year to ram home a lotto style win on their house, have their 2008 Toyota Corolla become suddenly worth a lot more money, have their Land Cruiser become a collector's item, or the SS Commodore Bogan wheels become an item of choice now. So, you know, you've got to look at Pokemon cards. You pretty much got to look at any ridiculous asset now where a global pandemic has created some absolute madness in the world. So, you know, this window to sell your overpriced assets has just been open for another year. And what an opportunity for people to let go of these assets. And I always say that, you know, you can only be sentimental about an asset that you can afford to keep. So I think people should have a think about that. Sydney, Melbourne property prices, 30 to 70% down. I'm talking about that for the outer suburbs, where the suburbs are either sinking, they're brown brick dog boxes that all look the same, miles away from the city or a beach, and no hope of any upside in the future. And throw in 6% interest rates and you have an absolute bloodbath. And as we've seen with the stock market and inflation expectations, they can turn on a dime. Retail hangover, yep, we've all bought lots of crap we don't need, we're not going to wear. I've been guilty of that. My guilty pleasures in life have been polo shirts and $60 dress watches, but that's not going to cost me my house. And now I've learnt that if I go to a Tommy Hilfiger warehouse outlet, I just need to buy a few and I'm set for life. Curbside cleanups, I mentioned. People will want to get rid of their rubbish and they'll pray for a curbside cleanup. Or you start to see neighbours banding together to buy a skip bin, not sitting at home over tea and scones trading worthless crypto. Gumtree, I think, will get flooded with rubbish. Prices will then decline and it just adds to the negative momentum. Economically, socially and politically, a shit show. We need a reset of asset prices. We need a reset of wages paid to childcare workers, aged care workers, pensions, minimum wages. We need a reset. Anyway, I came up, here's an oldie but a goodie. I said that you're on the third date, it's all going well, you choose Indian, obviously the third date's the penultimate date, and that's how fragile the property market truly is, and I think we've seen that's how fragile crypto markets have become and how fragile stock markets have become, along with speculative assets that have no fundamental value. And most bubbles end in IUM, and the next bubble is going to be Imodium. So that's my presentation, Martin.
Tony, thank you. Very, very thoughtful and thought-provoking there. For me, the real interesting observation is the difference between investing and speculating, right? There is a fundamental difference, and a lot of people who are actually claiming to be experts on crypto are just, you know, riding momentum. No fundamental value. Investing is very different, isn't it?
Oh, it certainly is. I should make it clear that we do have some cryptos which will survive market cycles, you know, your Bitcoin, your Ethereum, maybe your XRP and some others. But for me, investing is raising money for companies that create jobs, have earnings, or have the expectation of earnings. And, you know, investing, you do have to have a medium to longer term mindset. It's not about hitting the buy button of a stock and sweating or a crypto and looking to get out. But I think fortunately, even though key Australian and US markets, they're overpriced, but I think this speculation in other asset classes won't have an impact because I think markets generally are overpriced and due for a fall anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, interesting times. I agree with you on the property sentiment. You know, the current levels of affordability and prices are just stupid. They're going to have to come back at some point. I just, timing is the question for me, you know. The government will throw more money, they'll throw more programs, they'll try and keep this bubble going specifically to get through to the next election. So for me, if it doesn't happen immediately, right, after the next election, I think is going to be a real challenge. So prepare is what I'm saying.
Well, I think what we've seen is, you know, politicians and the government agencies are pretty much trying to apply a textbook solution to a situation that's clearly not textbook. Not many people have experience with a speculative bubble at all, and I don't think they're going to have the power to stop it from happening, from bursting. And you only have to have what my real estate agent said in Melbourne. Suddenly, properties are starting to come on the market and people will have to lower their prices. But a lot of people won't sell because they're expecting to get what they could have got a month earlier. So I think the psychological aspect really is going to toy with a lot of people and then lead to an avalanche of stock and price declines once people give up and or forced to sell by the banks. So yeah, timing's always an issue. I know that for us economic realists, the last year we've had asset prices go the other way. Let's be honest, it's pretty much due to COVID and the JobKeeper and the support elements and interest rates remaining low. But let's think about it, Martin. The biggest obstacle to high house prices is a strong economy because, you know, the long-term RBA cash rate is north of 6%. And where are we? 0.10. So I just think we're so out of kilter that the RBA is going to have, certainly has to lift rates. I probably think probably a good time to do it would be on Melbourne Cup Day when we've all had a skinful.
Yes, and it's worth just reflecting on, they've spent $1 trillion between federal and state level so far to try and prop the economy up. Right, rates are ultra low, and yet Frydenberg in the budget says, we know the economy is doing very well and we're just going to throw some more money on, you know, to try and make the economy work. I mean, if the economy was working well, they wouldn't need to do that. So, you know, we're already starting from a weak base. And then you have to say, absolutely, rates are really, really low. If they were to rise, that would create huge pain. And, you know, I always say to people, think about the counterfactual. Don't just assume that rates are going to stay where they are, right? What happens if rates do go up? How will you survive? And frankly, a lot of people just never ask that question and therefore will get blindsided until it actually happens. So prepare, you know, as you say, prepare, assume that it's going to happen at some point. And, you know, what you do now is going to determine how well you're going to escape the next 2 to 3 to 5 years, which could be, frankly, pretty awful.
Yeah, and I think that calling the top around the 17th of April is that you can still sell at a really good price relative to future valuations. And I think that having come off the top is going to slow down the process. But if you talk to people that are experts in their field, I was talking to a mortgage broker who's very good at his job, and he was going through the desperate measures people are going through to get loans, refinancing, putting up collateral and security with Bank of Mum and Dad. So it's classic top of the market activity. And I think people just aren't willing to be able to drive a car in reverse. My share portfolio has dropped 15 to 20%, admittedly off it's a really high base. But for me, seeing one of my core companies off 40% in a few weeks, I'm used to it. But can you imagine, it was funny, I was out shopping and I picked up 4 ready meals at Woolworths. Actually, my partner picked up 6. And I said, look, I've dropped 6 figures on the market. Let's only buy 4. And that's the wealth effect. Because the last couple of weeks, even though I've had a massive run, I haven't felt wealthy at all. I'm going to delay big purchases because it's all about mindset. And having one of my stocks drop 40% on paper, I just don't think the youth of today and or the baby boomers are going to feel comfortable seeing that with wildly held assets that are emotional ones.
No, absolutely. And, you know, we know, you know, I know, markets do go down as well. The property markets do go down as well. They don't always go up. And unfortunately, when they start going in the southerly direction, they can go quite quickly and the momentum is quite strong. And then, of course, there's a bunch of reinforcing feedback loops that just drive it significantly lower. And we are in stratospheric areas at the moment. So gravity is kind of act downwards rather than upwards from this point, certainly the most likely outcome. Tony, look, that's been a really important conversation, I think, for people in terms of getting their heads around what to think and what to do now. And your point about the psychology, I think, is the real point to take away here. You can't just analyze this in pure economic or macroeconomic terms, right? There's a whole bunch of herd mentality. There's a whole bunch of psychology here. And what I like about your perspective is you've been through that. You understand how the mind works and how actually psychology drives action, drives outcomes. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, for sure. And look, I'm not looking forward to where we're heading. But, you know, for some, it's been a chance to make a lot of money. But unfortunately, for mums and dads, people are going to struggle with no wage growth. There's, as I said, there's a dearth of second jobs available. And I think we're going to see social unrest. I think all that's remained relatively unchecked in Australia and hasn't happened yet. But I just think we're in for a rough period. It's going to be the great reset. I know the bulls will keep saying, Lacantro, you're wrong. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, the last year would have been a chance to clean up balance sheets, but, you know, watch the negative trajectory now. And as I said, the top of the market was the 17th of April. You know, I'm probably right, but honestly, I hope I'm not.
Okay, yeah. Tony. Well, we'll check back. Look, we've got a live show booked, I think, in June, so that'll be a great opportunity to pulse check whether your intuition about the top of the market was right or not. So that'll be great to have you back on again, and we'll pick up the conversation at that point. But I appreciate your time tonight. Very interesting, very important conversation. And folks, you've heard it here. You know, listen to what Tony's saying. His perspectives are really, really worth getting to understand.
Thank you. Absolute pleasure, Martin.
Thanks, Tony. We'll see you again soon.